Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Riverstone Energy Limited full-year results. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press star one on your telephone keypad. I must advise you the conference is being recorded today, Friday the 13th of February 2015. And I'd now like to hand over to your speaker today, Ken Ryan. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our second annual results for the year 2014. My name is Ken Ryan. I'm a managing director at Riverstone, and I'm joined by our two co-founders, Pierre LePere and David Lucien, as well as Alfredo Marti. I would like to talk you through Oriel's performance for the year 2014 before then handing over to Pierre, who will talk a little bit more about the portfolio and how that's doing, and then to David, who will get into more detail on the outlook in light of the current volatility in energy prices and general market environment, and we'll then open the lines to take your questions. In terms of performance, Oriel achieved a profit of $20.6 million for the year ended 31st December 2014. This resulted in an NAV per share of $16.31. This is a 27-cent increase from the net asset value of $16.04 per share as of December 31, 2013. This uplift in NAV was primarily driven by the 40% increase in the value of our Gulf of Mexico investment, Fieldwood, and an uplift of 50% in CIOC, the E&P investment focused on unconventional resources in Western Canada. The remaining investments are still valued at cost, though this will change as they progress through their business strategies. And we are pleased that the J-curve associated with the NAV has been very limited to date, and we're now well above our starting NAV as a company. The share price as of December 31 was £8.68, or $13.53, and this represented a discount to NAV of 17%. In part on the back of the strength of the U.S. dollar. At yesterday's close of £9.30, that implies a 12% discount at the current exchange rate of 154. Over the course of 2014, Oriel made a total of $574 million of commitments to eight new portfolio companies while continuing to invest in its existing portfolio. Oriel has maintained its strategy of backing proven management teams in attractive basins, with six new investments in the United States and Canada, as well as one each in Mexico and the Norwegian continental shelf. This led Oriel to finish 2014 with 59% of its capital committed to a total of 10 companies. And since the end of 2014, Oriel has announced two further commitments, resulting in total commitments of $917 million, or 75% of the capital raised. Given the dramatic changes reshaping the energy industry, we believe Oriel has a unique advantage of having 12 platform portfolio companies today. And importantly, they are currently actively pursuing opportunities in the current lower oil price environment. Oriel retains significant uninvested capital, with $835 million of cash awaiting to be invested at year-end. That is equivalent to 68% of the total capital raised. Pierre will get into more detail about each company and how they're positioned in this new environment. The core objective of Oriel remains focused on delivering long-term capital growth for its shareholders, and today's results demonstrate the early progress Oriel is making in this regard. We believe the company has an attractive mix of exposure across different hydrocarbon basins in both conventional and unconventional E&P plays. Furthermore, Oriel's world-class management teams are extremely well-positioned to utilize their deep industry knowledge to deliver excellent growth and returns to shareholders. With that, I'd like to pass you over to Pierre, who will go through the investment portfolio in a little bit more detail.
Thanks, Ken, and good afternoon, everybody. Oriel has made very good progress in our view in 2014. When we launched the IPO back in October of 2013, we said to you that we aimed to be fully committed within a timeline of 24 to 36 months. In the 16 months since the IPO, we've actually committed 75% of the capital to 12 different investments, as Ken mentioned. With the range of opportunities we currently see in the market, we expect to be fully committed well ahead of that 24 to 36 month projection, which was outlined in the prospectus. As Ken said, I'll touch on the current portfolio and pass it on to David to go through trends in the broader energy market and our current investment outlook. And to begin, I'd like to start with CIOC, which is Riverstone's largest investment in terms of gross unrealized value due to a 50% increase in its market value as of year-end. We made our initial commitment in March of last year for $60 million. Unlike many of our investments, CIOC is not a new company, but an existing exploration and production company focused on liquids-rich unconventional resources in Western Canada. We found this investment highly attractive due to its advantageous land position in the Montney and Duvernay formations of Western Canada's Deep Basin and the need for capital to support its rigorous drilling, delineation, and development program. We've invested $54 million of our commitment to date, which has led the company to double production to more than 6,000 barrels a day and has drilled some of the most top-performing wells in Canada. The strong operational performance and favorable valuation for the IPO of Seven Generations, which is a comparable company on neighboring acreage, supported the 50% increase in valuation. You will already be familiar with Fieldwood, which is the largest oil and gas producer in the offshore shallow Gulf of Mexico, and is run by Matt McCarroll, the CEO of a previously very successful Riverstone-backed company known as Dynamic Offshore, also that primary operations were in the shallow Gulf of Mexico. REL invested $54 million in March of last year, which was at the time of the acquisition of Sandridge Energy's Gulf of Mexico and Gulf Coast business unit, and shortly after the acquisition of similar assets from Apache. In 2014, Fieldwood completed additional acquisitions and drilled 21 wells. 15 of those have been deemed successful, which translates into a success rate of a little over 70%, which is in line with historical performance of this asset base. Fieldwood is one of Riverstone's larger investments. The company had EBITDA of approximately $1.5 billion U.S. dollars in 2014, and average daily production of approximately 100,000 barrel oil equivalents per day. Operationally, Fieldwood executed 60 recompletion projects, of which approximately 50% represented unbooked locations, and Fieldwood plugged 240 wells, removed 87 platforms, and 89 pipelines. Fieldwood is the undisputed leader in terms of scale and cost structure in its focus area in the shallow Gulf of Mexico. While we had raised our valuation to 1.5 in the third quarter of 2014, we lowered our mark slightly to 1.4 in December to reflect declines in comparable sector valuations. While many of Fieldwood's peers have faced significant declines in value, we still see our investment at a 40% premium to our cost due to our attractive entry price on all acquisitions, near-term production hedges, and moderate leverage. The rest of the portfolio remains marked at cost as the companies progress through their business strategies, invest capital, and build production and reserves, as Ken mentioned in his opening remarks. Our next investment, CNOR, which stands for Canadian Net Non-Operated Resources, was made in August of last year and focuses on partnering with experienced but capital-constrained operators to fund drilling programs in high-quality Canadian plays. The company is led by an industry veteran, Rick Grafton, who has a deep experience of executing this strategy over his 30 years of energy investing experience in Canada. Since our commitment, CNOR announced two high-profile joint ventures. The first is a $250 million commitment towards the development of Bellatrix's drilling inventory, with the company controlling the development of capital on a well-by-well basis. The second occurred after the price decline in December when CNOR closed a $500 million joint venture with Tourmaline Oil Company, buying a 25% working interest in the Peace River High area of Western Canada, involving both existing assets and future expenditure. In total, REL has funded $70 million of REL's $90 million commitment to date. As you might expect, the lower oil price environment is generating an abundant opportunity for CNOR with the capital markets closed to many operators. Next, Liberty Resources 2 continues to focus on drilling and completions in the acreage it acquired in the Williston Basin in North Dakota early last year. Liberty subsequently entered into a very well-timed acreage swap with Emerald Oil, in which Liberty agreed to divest approximately 31,500 non-core acres in North Dakota's McKenzie County to Emerald in exchange for approximately 4,175 net acres in the core of the play in North Dakota's Williams County and $78.4 million in cash. This transaction consolidates Liberty's core acreage position. It adds drilling locations and cash to fund operations. Liberty has completed 6 wells to date and has 13 more in inventory awaiting completions, though this may change if, for example, acquisitions appear more profitable than drilling. Liberty will continue to operating both rigs through March of 2015 as the company finishes drilling operations on its current pad, at which point the company will evaluate further drilling programs for 2015. The company will continue to finish completions on its wells currently in inventory. Castex is a well-known E&P company focusing on oil and gas in southern Louisiana and the Gulf of Mexico shelf. REL invested in Castex in the fourth quarter of 2014 through 2 separate transactions. The first involved a $67 million commitment to Castex 2014, which is a new venture specifically focused on seismic-driven exploration using Castex's extensive subsurface database and pipeline of exploration projects. Separately, in December, REL spent $48 million on the purchase of partnership interests in Castex 2005, making Riverstone the largest shareholder in a leading energy producer in the region with current production in excess of 130 million cubic feet a day. Interestingly, one of Castex's largest assets, Phoenix Exploration, was previously owned by Riverstone in its third conventional energy fund, and Castex has nearly tripled the reserves since its ownership. The management team for both ventures is led by industry veteran CEO John Stoica, who has approximately 30 years of experience in the Gulf Coast region. Although we've maintained the valuation at cost, the initial results are encouraging, with Castex 2014 drilling 7 wells in the second half of 2014, 5 of which were successful and 3 of which are already in production. Eagle 2, which was REL's first investment, is the E&P business led by Steve Antry and focused on the Mid-Continent region. REL has increased its investment over the course of the year to $37 million out of a $50 million commitment as the company has progressed its strategy of acquiring acreage for delineation and development. Notably, Eagle completed the acquisition of 20,000 net acres in the Alfalfa, Grant, and Woods counties of the Mississippi Lime for $195 million in the fourth quarter. This is in addition to the approximately 6,000 acres the company has acquired in the south-central Oklahoma oil province earlier in the year. The Mid-Continent region is full of acquisition opportunities, which the team is progressing on. Rock Oil, you will recall, is another example of a build-up partnering with a proven management team. Their strategy is to build concentrated acreage positions in premium unconventional basins such as the Eagle Ford Shale, the Utica, and the Permian Basin in the United States. So far, REL has invested $20 million of its $83 million commitment to support several acreage acquisitions. Notably, the company acquired approximately 13,000 net acres in the Midland Basin in the fourth quarter of 2014. Sierra Oil and Gas is a very exciting investment, which is the very first company established to take part in the historic opening of Mexico's energy market to outside investors. We've assembled a world-class E&P team of executives from companies such as Shell, BP, Anadarko, Pemex, and Statoil, who have a strong understanding of the assets, which will soon be open to competition. In addition, our funding partners include NCAP and a Mexican institutional investor, I2, which brings local capital and execution expertise to the company. REL has only funded $2 million of its $75 million commitment to support the initial setup and subsurface studies. So this company retains a large amount of its capital to invest in the upcoming licensing rounds, which are taking place amidst a lower, more favorable oil price environment. We expect Sierra to be well positioned in these auctions due to its strong capital position and first mover advantage. And finally, Borrego Exploration is another build-up with a very well-known management team with numerous exploration successes in the Norwegian and UK continental shelves through Rivas Energy and Agora Oil and Gas, where they were responsible for discovering over 1 billion barrel oil equivalents in gross terms. Borrego will employ the same proven strategy of acquiring non-operated working interests in select exploration licenses. Like Sierra, we have funded only startup costs, so REL retains $66 million of its $67 million commitment to be deployed in the most attractive farm-ins and licensing rounds in the lower oil price environment. So as you can see, REL is very well positioned to benefit in this new environment, and I'll now turn it over to David to touch on this future opportunity in more detail.
Thank you, Pierre. As everybody knows, 2014 has been a tumultuous year for the industry. The surge in North American oil production against the backdrop of fairly stagnant demand and the decision by OPEC to maintain supplies has obviously led to a 43% collapse in crude oil prices during the year. This is having a fairly profound impact across the industry, from boardrooms in Houston to the oil sands of Canada to the deep waters off Africa, all places that we have activity. As you are aware, many of REL's investments are at the forefront of the shale revolution. There's no doubt that the current environment presents challenges for the industry. However, we believe that REL has established a very solid foundation and is well positioned to benefit from new opportunities emerging from this disruption in the energy landscape. As investors, we do not place bets on commodities, as you know. We hedge through the cycle and will only make investments if we can lock in attractive returns. Although oil prices appeared relatively stable in recent years, it's worth bearing in mind that volatility is nothing new to us or the industry. We've seen the oil price decline by 15% or more on 13 occasions in Riverstone's 14-year history, and by something like 30% or more on another four or five occasions. However, we've delivered strong returns through the cycles by sticking to our proven strategy of backing the best management teams across numerous conventional and unconventional basins, using leverage prudently, maintaining multiple exit opportunities, and seeking to de-risk our capital early. Our pipeline of additional opportunities or additional portfolio companies remains strong, with over $250 million of opportunities to deploy capital in E&P and midstream. You may also be aware that we have increased our capital commitments by 16% since we published our year-end valuations. A new credit investment vehicle, Riverstone Credit Opportunities, is managed by the Riverstone Credit Team to take advantage of what we see as a unique window of opportunity to deliver private equity-like returns by participating very selectively in the origination of secondary markets for E&P and midstream credit. We've also added another investment in Canada through Canara 3, which involves a third partnership with one of our very strong management teams. To conclude, REL has had an exceptional year of progress in committing capital, and its undrawn capital position makes it well positioned to take advantage of the opportunities emerging from lower oil prices and financial distress among overlevered producers. We're confident that REL's collection of proven management teams will deliver well on our investment objectives and perform strongly for shareholders. With that, we'd like to open the floor to any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. And our first question comes from the line of James Glass from Numis. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Obviously, the oil price has moved quite considerably in 2014, as you say, and you tell us about the opportunities that it presents. But I'm just wondering, given that you guys have made commitments to some of the teams earlier in 2014 when the oil price was up at, I don't know, $90, $100 per barrel, whether kind of the economics have moved such that actually drilling in that specific area may no longer be actually viable. And if that were to be the case, do you guys have like abort fees that we see in other mainstream private equity where actually, you know what, this isn't going to work, so we're not going to put any money in and let's just call it a day?
Hi, James. It's Ken. I think it's very important to make clear that capital that is committed but undrawn or uninvested is essentially capital that's available to be invested at the current oil price environment. So in other words, even if we've committed X amount of capital to a particular company, if we don't see an opportunity to deploy that capital with that company, that can be used elsewhere.
Okay.
And but it is not subject to any abort fees or anything like that.
Okay. Fine. It clarifies that. Thanks.
This is David Lucian. I might also add, you know, we've looked through the course of the last few months very carefully through the total portfolio and looked at commitments we made and wondered, asked ourselves the question, are there commitments we made where the strategy is not going to be as effective in this price environment? And should we increase allocations elsewhere, decrease allocations in cases like that? We have made decisions to do that in our current fund. That's Fund 5 that is, currently investing alongside REL. But none of those decisions have been made on investments that REL is part of.
Okay.
So
yep.
The simple answer would be no on REL.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Anish Kapadia from TPH. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I had a few questions. Firstly, on the valuations of your assets, I was just wondering what oil price deck do you use in terms of looking at those valuations and kind of how often do those change? And then the second question is really on the opportunity set that you see out there at the moment. Clearly, the oil price is helping. But just wondering, where is it that you're seeing the best opportunities? Is it North American unconventionals? Is it globally in terms of developments that are struggling for funding? Or is exploration becoming more attractive? Just want to try and get an idea of what you see as becoming more attractive in this environment. Thank you.
Thanks, Anish. It's Ken. I'll hit the first one, which is relatively straightforward. We basically, when we do a point-in-time valuation, we tend to use the current oil price strip at that time. And obviously, that's part of the input into the valuation, but it's always all valuations are done at the current forward strip. And then we obviously look at comparable M&A transactions, and multiples of comparable publicly traded companies as well. So it's a multifaceted approach. And with respect to with respect to opportunities, I would say we are seeing a lot of companies that currently are facing what I'll broadly describe as liquidity constraints, and that's across conventional and unconventional, largely in North America. And so we're evaluating a number of opportunities where we can, potentially help solve that by looking at potential asset acquisitions where we'll obviously take the asset and they can hopefully for them shore up their liquidity. But I would say it's across the piece.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Once again, as a reminder, that was star one for any further questions. And our next question comes from the line of Fred Lucas from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you, guys. Couple of questions, if I may. Can you give some color to how you see the reset of asset prices in the market? Obviously, as the oil price has fallen, I'm wondering how the bid-offer spread is resetting in various asset classes that you look at. And the second question, though, I would hope not relevant ever, but perhaps not relevant now, but I'm just wondering, should you have to take asset impairments, what rules govern that process? I think for listed companies, there's a clear set of rules, IAS 36, which determine the impairment process. I wonder what rules you use. Perhaps it's the same IAS 36.
Thanks, Fred. It's Ken. I think I'm not sure I can give you very, very specific examples on key metrics in terms of where assets are potentially trading at today. I think there's a, right now, at least from our perspective, there's a significant bid-offer spread between what companies think their assets are worth and what they today want to sell them for versus what we think they're worth and what we would buy them for. I suspect that bid-offer spread narrows as we get through April in particular, when we have, you know, we go through a significant round of borrowing-based redeterminations, and liquidity becomes becomes more and more precious. And I suspect, you know, values come get closer to where we see them today. On your,
the only thing I would add, Ken.
Sorry. Yes,
the only thing I would add to your remarks on the first question is, this is pretty typical of what we have seen through other price declines, even when they weren't as dramatic as this. There's always this time period of 6 to 9 months where sort of buyers have reset to lower prices, but sellers haven't reset yet, whether that's optimism or they're just not under enough pressure yet, to Ken's point about borrowing-based redeterminations, which generally will start to surface in our view in the spring, or covenant issues. But the other part of the equation that doesn't get as much headline commentary is costs. And both capital and operating costs are coming down quite dramatically. And so until people start to see where that's going to settle out, it's very hard to make judgments on asset values, because it's not just as simple as I know you know, down because of revenue or price. Mm-hmm. You have to look at, well, what's happened to cost during those time periods in terms of what is the net margin that is resetting from yesterday's market to today's market. So all of that generally takes a little bit of time to sort itself out.
Sure, yeah. And on the impairments, should they be necessary?
Yeah. We basically value, we go through a fair value measurement exercise, IFRS 13. So every quarter we do a mark-to-market valuation of the portfolio. So that's the process we follow. So if you take Fieldwood as an example, we'd mark that up in September. The fair value based on our valuation work as of the end of the year had dropped a little bit. So that got marked down. So that's basically the process we follow. And then those valuations are audited by EY.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you once again. That was star one for any other questions. Thank you. And we have no further questions coming through.
Thank you, everybody, for taking the time this afternoon. And hope everybody has a good Friday afternoon and a nice weekend.
Thank you very much. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.